Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Lori London reporting. Well, the old rule, there is no crying in baseball, wasn't in effect Thursday night in Washington, D.C. at the annual Congressional Baseball Game. The event, held this year at Nationals Park, home of the Major League Washington Nationals, was an emotional affair, coming a day after a gunman opened fire at the Republican team practice, wounding four. VOA's Catherine Gibson was at the game.
We're seeing record attendance numbers for this game. You know, usually it gets a very healthy amount of attendance from the Washington, D.C. area because the money from the tickets goes to support three charities. But now, with all of the increased attention after the shooting, incredible number of people here at the game tonight.
Congressman Steve Scalise, who was supposed to be playing second base for the Republican team, was instead lying in a hospital bed after being critically wounded in the hip. Both teams gathered on the field and kneeled in prayer for his recovery. President Donald Trump on Friday is expected to give America's Cuba policy its second major change in 3 years during an appearance in Miami, reviving the Cold War goal of starving Cuba's communist system of cash. Stopping short of a complete turnabout, Trump will announce a revised policy aimed at stopping the flow of U.S. dollars to the country's military and security services while maintaining diplomatic relations and allowing U.S. airlines and cruise ships to continue service to the island. Long-term U.S. mortgage rates rose this week as the benchmark 30-year rate rebounded from a seven-month low, according to the mortgage firm Freddie Mac. You're listening to VOA. An American college student released by North Korea after 17 months in detention suffered a severe neurological injury, according to hospital officials in Ohio. After returning home from North Korea, Otto Warmbier was immediately transported to the University of Cincinnati Medical Center Hospital, where he's in stable condition. Dr. Daniel Cantor is treating Warmbier.
His neurological condition can be best described as a state of unresponsive wakefulness. He has spontaneous eye opening and blinking. However, he shows no signs of understanding language, responding to verbal commands, or awareness of his surroundings. He has not spoken. He has not engaged in any purposeful movements or behaviors.
According to doctors, Warmbier suffered severe damage to all parts of his brain. Warmbier's parents say their son had been in a coma for more than a year. North Korea sentenced Warmbier, a student at the University of Virginia, to a 15-year prison term for attempting to steal a propaganda poster. Fred and Cindy Warmbier say they were told their son was given a sleeping pill shortly after his trial last March and that he never woke up. Fred Warmbier, Otto's father, says he does not believe North Korea's account of what happened. London officials said Thursday firefighters had put out that blaze that killed 12 people as it raced through a 24-story apartment building earlier, and that an unknown number of people remained inside. London Fire Brigade Commissioner Danny Cotton told Sky News that they do not expect to find anyone else alive.
People want answers, and it's absolutely right. And that's why I am today ordering a full public inquiry into this disaster. We need to know what happened. We need to know, have an explanation of this. We owe that to the families, to the people who have lost loved ones, friends, and the homes in which they lived.
That's British Prime Minister Theresa May calling for an emergency meeting on the disaster. London Fire Brigade Commissioner Danny Cotton.
Due to the severity of the fire and the way things are, it will take a long time for us to be able to do that search to properly identify anyone who's left in the building. But we will do that as soon as we can in conjunction with the police.
At least 74 people were hospitalized with injuries. Hospital officials say 20 are in intensive care. A U.S. soldier who prompted a multinational search after going missing last week has been found alive on his own ship. Navy officials say gas turbine systems technician Third Class Peter Mims disappeared June 8th while working on the guided missile cruiser USS Shiloh. I'm Lori London in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, June 16th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Lesotho Prime Minister-elect Thomas Thabane will be inaugurated today despite the assassination of his second wife.
As it is now, the inauguration will continue, but investigations are taking place around the death of the wife.
Samuyane Unsekele is the General Secretary of the All Basotho Convention Party. Zambia's president arrives in Lesotho in the spirit of SADC solidarity and the promotion of good governance. Human Rights Watch official condemns Egypt's human rights record, and South Sudan again accuses Sudan of supporting South Sudan rebels.
If you look at the capability that the rebels is having or using during that operations, indicates that these rebels must have received support from Sudan, and this is beyond any reasonable doubt.
Colonel Santo Demeche, South Sudan's deputy military spokesman, and an online publication celebrating 17 West African photographers, is being launched today in Bamako and Dakar. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The inauguration of Lesotho Prime Minister-elect Thomas Thabane will take place today, Friday, despite yesterday's assassination of his second wife. The General Secretary of the All Basotho Convention ABC Party, Samuyele Unsekele, says police have launched an investigation into the murder. Local media reports say Mrs. Thabane and her friend were both killed by an unknown assailant while they were on their way home in a car. Analysts say Mr. Thabane's campaign promise to reform the security sector could have contributed to the attack, but ABC Party General Secretary Unsekele tells viewers Peter Clotty that the Prime Minister-elect will not be deterred in his commitment to reform the security sector.
I happened to visit him after the passing away of his second wife. He was traumatized by the situation, especially on account of the situation that he is supposed to be inaugurated as a prime minister. When things like this ones happen, we, even him as well, I think we are taking this as intended, maybe to track his mind into evil happenings during his inauguration.
So the inauguration on Friday will not be affected by the death of the second wife, will it be?
No, as it is now, the inauguration will continue, but investigations are taking place around the death of the wife.
What has been the reaction of the All Basotho Convention as well as the people of Lesotho following the news that unknown assailant killed the second wife and another person?
The entire nation is in tatters, confused with this death. People are having mixed feelings, rumoring around what may be the cause of the death.
Have you been in touch with the police?
The police are actually the ones who are entitled to take up the matter. And I think they are doing that as we speak. But this is not only the issue of police, but the security of this country is after this matter. I think very soon the truth will be known.
Well, some people are suggesting that the Prime Minister, who promised security sector reform, this should serve as an impetus for him to go ahead with the security sector reforms that he promised. Others are also saying that because of his promises, that is why this could have happened.
We as a party, we respect rule of law, and we will forever allow rule of law to take its course. We are for the issue of reforms, especially to the entire constitution, even in our security reform. That is our interest, to make sure that our country remains stable, and it is the country that respects human rights, even the rule of law. On top of that, ABC will be battling too much to reconcile the divided nation of Basotho, to make sure that everyone is living in harmony with peace and stability.
Samonyani, what would be the message of the All Basotho Congress, as well as incoming Prime Minister Tom Tabani, to Basotho?
I think the message is that people should be relaxed and expect the government that will be for all Basotho, not a partisan ruling like earlier government.
Samoyane Unsakele is the General Secretary of the All Basotho Convention Party. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clotty from Lesotho's capital, Maseru. Zambian President Edgar Lungu is in Lesotho for Friday's swearing-in of Lesotho Prime Minister-elect Thomas Tabani. This despite the assassination yesterday of Mr. Tabani's second wife by an unknown assailant. South African Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa, who is facilitator of the Southern African Community on Lesotho, will represent President Jacob Zuma. Zambia's presidential spokesman, Amos Chanda, says President Lungu's presence and that of other regional leaders is in the spirit of SADC solidarity and the promotion of good political and economic governance in the Southern African region.
The president takes note of the sad incident that happened yesterday. The estranged wife of the prime minister-elect was sadly gunned down and killed. But the security measures, we are told, have been put in place, and the president was assured of the safety. And also, after consultation with other SADC leaders, it was decided that for the stability of Lesotho, which has not seen the best of times in recent years, you require a strong leadership without any unnecessary power vacuums in there. So the inauguration will take place. The prime minister must take office, begin to stabilize the country and move forward. So this is in the spirit of encouraging Lesotho to abide by the principles of good governance and holding free and fair elections. And SADC takes note that this particular election was fairly executed and therefore deserves the support of the region. And therefore the president has gone there.
Amos, what is the plan for the Southern Africa region? Because it seems to me that country continues to have problems when it comes to consolidating democracy.
The SADC principles on elections and good governance is premised on the fact that instability in one region invariably poses a threat of instability in neighboring countries, which is why the leaders of the SADC region wants to support and help one another to ensure that there is consolidation of democracy. Particularly in Lesotho, SADC mandated Cyril Ramaphosa, Deputy President of South Africa, to be the facilitator of that process, and he has done so well so far, which is why it was imperative that apart from him, other leaders of the region must travel there to support that. He himself will be traveling to Maseru, Lesotho tomorrow. I must tell you that just 2 weeks ago, President Ian Khama of Botswana sent a special envoy to Lusaka to come and discuss the upcoming elections in Lesotho and express concern that some of the things he was observing as a member of SADC in Lesotho might endanger the electoral process in Lesotho. The two leaders intervened quietly and offered the necessary advice, and which is why the outcome probably is as good as it is. So they want to ensure that the process is supported throughout. And this is the general view they have taken on other member states, that one stable democracy elsewhere is a great advantage for the entire region.
Amos, talking about consolidating democracy in Lesotho, it seems to me lately democracy in your country has come under fire, especially with the arrest of the opposition leader, what happened in parliament, the suspension of some parliamentarians. What's happening?
Yeah. What is happening is that the strength of a democracy is how it survives the turbulences. If a democracy exists and the illegal acts of any interest groups, whether they are politicians, whether they are criminal gangs, whether they are church group, whether they are religious, when people act in a manner that threatens democracy, if those are illegal acts, the justice system must move in and curb those illegal acts. If you do not curb illegality, you do not curb the violation of democratic principle, the democracy itself would not survive. In Parliament, what happened was that they breached the standing rules and regulations of Parliament, and the Speaker quoted correctly the violations they committed. Just 3 months ago, they committed the same offense. They apologized, and they were censured, and they were given the same one, and they committed the same mistake. So the Speaker is just enforcing the rules of Parliament. Democracy does not entail the absence of rules and regulations. Otherwise, that will be anarchy and not democracy.
Amos Chanda is spokesman for Zambian President Edgar Lungu. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lusaka. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, June 16th. Daybreak Africa time is 15 and a half minutes past the hour. The South Sudan Army has again accused Sudan's government of supporting rebels fighting to topple the South Sudan government. Deputy Sudan People's Liberation Army, SPLA spokesman, Colonel Santo Domich says there is ample evidence that Sudan armed forces supported rebels who attacked an SPLA base in northern Upper Nile last week. As Michael Atit reports from Juba, a Sudanese official has denied the accusations.
Deputy military spokesperson Colonel Santo Domich told reporters that the South Sudanese army has plenty of evidence to prove that Sudan's government is offering logistical support to rebels fighting the Juba government. On June the 10th, Domich says rebels loyal to former First Vice President Riek Machar, wearing Sudanese uniforms and using Sudan Armed Forces military equipment, attacked government positions in Upper Niles, Quek, Gabat, and Kola towns.
The South force decided to withdraw in the night and allowing a rebels group to occupy Quek, putting uniform of Sudan Armed Forces. With all the military equipments that were in Quek, with all the field artillery, with all the mounted land cruisers with light and heavy machine guns.
Domich says that proved positive the rebels were being assisted by Sudan.
And again, if you look at the capability that the rebels is having or using during that operations, indicates that these rebels must have received support from Sudan, and this is beyond any reasonable doubt.
Domich says that after close monitoring of the rebel activity, it is clear that Sudan government supports the fighters with ammunition, training, and even medical care.
The senior commanders, then the leaders of the rebels, are being harbored in Khartoum. They are living in Khartoum. They are operating from there. They are remote controlling the operation from Khartoum against the government and the Republic of South Sudan.
Domich says the Sudanese government has been asked time and again to stop supporting rebels and to cooperate with the government of South Sudan. He accuses Sudan of violating the unilateral ceasefire announced by President Kiir late last month and warned the SPLA will defend its border when necessary.
Our mandate is to make sure that the national integrity of the Republic of South Sudan is protected using all means available.
Sudanese Information Minister Ahmed Bilal Osman in Khartoum strongly denies his government providing logistical support to South Sudanese rebels and accused Juba of hosting rebels trying to topple President Omar al-Bashir's government.
This is not true. Actually, they are saying this to cover what they have done the last month when the rebels come from the south.
Bilal points out that Sudan has been hosting South Sudanese refugees for months and would not allow them to carry out activities that might create insecurity in South Sudan.
Those who are here, we are just treating them as refugees or as citizens. We cannot separate politicians from normal citizens from the south. We have almost 1 million here. But they know very well that when Riek Machar came here, we didn't accept him because he's an overt one.
In the cooperation agreement signed in September 2012, the governments of Sudan and South Sudan agreed not to host or support host rebels fighting each other's government. Since then, both sides have repeatedly accused one another of doing the exact opposite. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
An official of the U.S.-based Human Rights Watch says human rights violations by the government of Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi are on the rise. Ahmed Benkemsi is Human Rights Watch's Middle East and North Africa Communications Director. He says the Egyptian government has been arresting and detaining thousands of political activists as well as cracking down on social media websites, all in the name of fighting terrorism.
Basically, if we have to sum it up, dissent is banned in Egypt. It is that bad. I mean, there are laws banning protests. It is illegal to protest in the streets in Egypt according to those laws. There are absurd restrictions on journalism, like the legal obligation for journalists to publish only the account of the Ministry of Defense on terrorist issues. Otherwise, a journalist can be prevented from doing his job and fined. The constraints are so great on civil society organizations, and in this constraint, I include travel bans, asset freezes, that civil society is effectively paralyzed. And of course, there are mass crimes and killing of opponents. The August 2013 massacre in Rabat Square, days after the military staged a coup on elected President Mohamed Morsi, is possibly a crime against humanity. It was a deliberate, planned killing of about 1,000 protesters in one day, one of the worst massacres of unarmed civilians in modern history. Overall, since the Sisi regime is in place, we have seen a resurgence of routine use of torture, extrajudicial killings, arrests. According to some different numbers, 40 to 60,000 opponents have been either detained or prosecuted or arrested or tortured. Unfortunately, these disappearances are by the hundreds. This is the general picture, and it's really, really grim.
But Ackman, the Egyptian government says that all these arrests you talk about are part of the government's effort to fight terrorism.
Listen, military forces in what they say is the fight against terrorism have committed torture. They have committed enforced disappearances, likely extrajudicial killings. And they even staged a counterterrorism raid with a grossly doctored propaganda video. The military also wiped most of a border town, Rafah, destroying thousands of houses without any convincing military explanation, forcing families to relocate without proper compensation, that too in the name of terrorism. And despite all of that, ISIS continued to operate, even in places ostensibly controlled by the government. So these abuses by the government, they might very well increase ISIS's ability to recruit among abused populations. If these are the counterterrorism efforts that the West is talking about, then it is a tragic mistake to support them. That's on the one hand. On the other hand, many of the people who have been arrested have absolutely no connection, not only with terrorism altogether, but even with Islamist movements. You have some totally secular activists, you know, human rights defenders, who by no stretch of the mind have any connection with any terrorist group, and they are arrested too, and by the hundreds, and they are abused, and they are beaten up. So, I mean, the excuse of fighting terrorism really doesn't hold up.
Ahmed Benkamsi is Human Rights Watch's Middle East and North Africa Communications Director. He was speaking with me from Rabat, Morocco. An online publication will be launched today, Friday, that celebrates 17 photographers from Bamako and Dakar. The event will take place in Berlin as part of a years-long project on photography and orality. One of the project's founders, Barbel Kuster, an art history professor at the Technical University of Berlin, talked to Ricky Schreyack about the publication.
We thought it was really interesting to just let them talk about their ideas and let them invent narrations about their ideas. And this was going on in conception of the project regarding to this idea that photographers, more than maybe another kind of medium in the visual arts, is depending on the stories you tell about it. And what we heard from the photographers is it was about much communication they do before making photographs, while making photographs, and while making, for example, portraits, or while making street photography. They were always telling the story as a kind of communicating process and a kind of communicating idea of photography.
Can you give me an example, either from Omar Victor Diop or Fatoumata Diabaté, an example of this orality informing the photographs that you're speaking about?
Yes, for example, Fatoumata Diabaté, she is working with oral traditions, and she's inventing new photographers' perceptions of oral traditions, like Contefi. They were told as she was a child, and she's going on with this oral traditions in new, more conceptual work she's doing as L'homme en animal, L'homme en objet, two kind of series she did. She is a kind of changing the story into a picture, into an image, and then she's coming back with this image to her social surroundings. So she's coming back, bringing the stories, the old stories from backward times, bringing to her time. She's actualizing them in a way, and she's bringing the image back into the story. So this is a kind of process she's inventing.
Do you think in some way West African photography acts as a different style, its own style of photojournalism that we are used to in the West?
in our project, we try to be very open regarding the style or the topic of photography. We had some really journalist press photographers within our group, so Jibril C. I think it was interesting because the photojournalists, they were also telling, we want to tell stories about Africa. We want to tell stories about Africa for Africa.
Barbel Kusta is an art history professor at the Technical University of Berlin. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Berlin. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good morning to you, James. We begin with the controversy trailing the elections conducted by the Nigerian Ministry of Youth and Sports into the 31 sports federation in the country. Tempers flared at the National Stadium Abuja venue of the elections earlier this week as the disqualification of some candidates did not go down well with those affected as the situation degenerated into physical combat in some cases. In the Athletics Federation of Nigeria, out of the 25 contestants, 10 were disqualified. Among those disqualified was Brown Ibewele.
Somebody that said that I'm not participating in the election at all is not the director technical in my country. And Buharis, we are fighting corruption. This is not corruption, this is murder. I was not even told that without God this morning, I came there and pasted a small piece of paper to say the following people are disqualified. No explanation, no reason. They are winning a banana republic, the biggest black race in the world. We are still behaving like this and we say we are fighting corruption. What corruption are we fighting?
Brown Ebiwele, who is popularly known as the Juju Man, noted that the elections were not only rigged, but were predetermined.
If there's any misconduct from my part, one would expect the president of Finnish circumstances to step in. There's no election. I can tell them that. By the time I finish, we know why I'm called the Juju Man.
However, according to electoral officials, the candidates were disqualified due to reasons ranging from their inability to provide tax clearance and educational certificates. And now to Uganda, where the 2017 African Rally Championship contention will head to Uganda for the fourth round after almost 2 months' break. This year, the Pearl of Africa Rally is expected to hold from June the 30th to 2nd July. The two-day event is expected to cover a total competitive distance of 212.64 kilometers. Jeff Kabagambi, ARC Riley Clark, says safety is of the first concern to the organizers.
Actually, safety is the first for motorsport. Believe in safety. However much others claim that it could be dangerous, but it's not, because others wouldn't be here.
Former Ugandan national rally champion Arthur Bilich is excited at the opportunity to compete with other drivers from other parts of the world.
It's very good to gauge ourselves with good international drivers, and I think this is a great opportunity for us to gauge ourselves with these top African drivers. And to be honest, we are ready for them. And they should be ready for us to give them a run for their money.
In athletics news, Athletics Kenya have invited over 200 athletes for next week's national trials ahead of the IWAF World Athletics Championship set for between August the 4th and 13th in London. And finally, in football news, Cameroon will open their Group B campaign in the FIFA Confederations Cup when they face Chile at the Okotiteri Stadium in Moscow on Sunday evening. The match will mark an emotional return to the tournament for the indomitable Lions, whose last appearance in 2003 saw them finish as runners-up as Africa best showing in the competition. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. And that's it for this Friday, June 16th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butt in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good weekend.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in, you will be glad you did. I guarantee it.